where we came from, where we've been. They're eternal questions that say a lot about where we're going as the human race. Welcome to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. Welcome to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. I am Jim Harold. So glad to be with you once again. And today we're going to talk about something. As soon as I saw this book, I said, we have to speak to this gentleman because this is something that has long fascinated me. I remember as a little kid watching a TV show, and it wasn't on very long. It was called, The Man from Atlantis with Patrick Duffy, who went on to become famous for Dallas, of course. But Atlantis is a topic that has long fascinated me, as I said, since I was a kid. And this latest book by J. Douglas Kenyon is on that very subject, Ghosts of Atlantis, How the Echoes of Lost Civilizations Influence Our Modern World. And we're so glad to have Mr. Kenyon with us. For almost a quarter of a century, he was the editor and publisher of Atlantis Rising magazine. He is the author and editor of several books, including Forbidden History and Forbidden Science, and the writer, producer, and narrator of several documentary films, including Technologies of the Gods, Clash of the Geniuses, and The Atlantis Connection. He lives in Georgia, and we're speaking with him today. Sir, thank you for joining us on the program.
Well, thank you for having me.
So I have to ask you this. Many people think, oh, Atlantis, that's just something in mythology. That's a nice fairy tale. But you're here to tell us that Atlantis was very real, correct?
Well, I do believe it is. And I certainly, even if you don't accept the physical Atlantis that most people argue about, I still think it's an important part of our psychology. It's an important part of our collective unconscious. And that's really the thing that I think drives the subject, drives the conversation, because it's not just a cartoon. It's not just an archaeological mystery. It's all of those things, but it's a lot more.
Now, the thing that makes me believe that, for example, people talk about, quote, the flood myth. But it's interesting, if you look at almost every culture, there is a, quote, flood myth. To me, right, that has to have its origins in something that is real. And so it is with Atlantis, that it seems to be very cross-cultural. Isn't it true that many, many cultures talk about this this lost civilization, advanced civilization?
Absolutely. The most prominent example outside of Plato is the story of Noah's flood in the Bible.
Sure.
And similar stories. Some people think that the story of Noah is actually a takeoff from Gilgamesh, the Babylonian epic. But then you get it with Indians, you get it with every indigenous group in the world, many of whom never had any contact with any other society. Like the Aborigines of Australia would be a good example there.
Now, in your book, you talk about the Great Forgetting. What do you mean by the Great Forgetting?
Okay, this is really the most important point that we're trying to make, is that we're a society in amnesia. That's talked about by a lot of people, Graham Hancock most prominently, but the idea was really developed by Emmanuel Velikovsky, who is also considered the father of catastrophism, the idea that history has been punctuated by these great catastrophic events, and that in the aftermath of that kind of thing, we forget. Well, the thing is, the trauma, it leaves such a deep scar that we cover it over with a veil of forgetfulness. And that becomes actually systematized. It's made part of the rules of the conversation going on. And that's what we're dealing with here. That amnesia is no minor thing. It's a deep problem. And there are many other issues that are basically part of the syndrome that flow from that. And that's what we're trying to get across.
Now, I don't want to make light of this condition, but is it possible that somehow we as people, humanity, suffer from a case of PTSD writ large because of this loss?
I would say PTSD is just another name for what I'm talking about. The idea is that, and spread over a much larger period of time, and an area, it's more of a universal phenomenon. I mean, people think about PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome, as something that's confined to an individual who's been in war or something like that. But our point is, that's the way it works. And it works that way both on the microcosmic level and on the macrocosmic level. And so all I'm saying is, take the same principles that you use to look at individual behavior and apply it to society as a whole. And I don't know why we shouldn't do that. It makes perfect sense.
Now, you talk about a search for lost records. Is it possible that the Atlanteans somehow left us some kind of written proof of their existence?
Well, you know, no one knows for sure because it hasn't been found yet. However, there are a lot of references in archaeological literature, like the Book of Thoth mentioned in Egypt at Edfu and so forth. But Dr. Robert Schock, who is famous for redating the Sphinx and a number of other things, a geologist, he just did a paper along with Robert Bobal and I forgot the other author of the paper who actually provided the material that started it, but it looks at the idea that there are actually references in hieroglyphs to some kind of a chamber in the vicinity of the Great Sphinx, which was locked and contained records. I mean, a lot of people, some of whom were, he's an example of a hardcore scientist who thinks there's evidence there for such a thing. Someone like Edgar Cayce, who is an intuitive, basically, but who had a very good track record, he thought there was such a thing. And his organization has been very active in pursuing that possibility. So we talk about, I'm convinced there is such a thing or that there is not such a thing. I'm just thinking there's a lot of very interesting evidence that ought to be considered in this field. And if we keep our eye on the ball, eventually we may come across something, though God knows whether we can understand what we find, even if we do find it. I'm not sure. It'll be very difficult, obviously, to interpret. Of course, we're looking. The question is, what are we looking for? Are we looking for some kind of written record, or is it possible there might be a record in some other form? And indeed, I think there is, and that's where I think you get into the more intuitive kinds of things, and also into the neglected archaeological story that is shunned by mainstream science, but is actually very, very, very complete when you look at it.
Now, today, when you look at our society, boy, we think we're smart. And we are smart in many ways. I mean, you look at something like the iPhone, it's a technological marvel. And the things that mankind is capable of. However, we tend to kind of look at these ancient peoples, many people doing like, oh, they were backward. And, you know, they they weren't that smart, which I think is entirely the wrong way of looking at it when you see some of the things they accomplished without the benefit of our, quote, modern technology. So the question is, do you think the ancients, in particular the Atlanteans, if they existed, had knowledge that we have never regained? Maybe it's lost knowledge of some sort. I know you talk about lost knowledge in the book.
Yes. I think that's what you have to consider. John Anthony West, I know he used to talk about the difference between a hard technology and a soft technology. And some people like, and a soft technology referring to something that was based more on intuition and inner awareness. And but basically when it was developed properly, could lead to powers that are beyond the grasp of ordinary people. I mean, you find this mentioned and referred to in many traditions, and not the least are the Vedic traditions of India. I'm thinking about where, you know, you have an amazing structure that's preserved by oral tradition, passed along from generation to generation for thousands of years. And we find this in various places, and it's basically telling us there, and now it's incomprehensible that you could convey that kind of that much detail in precision and preserve it for thousands of years simply by passing it verbally from one generation to the next. And I think this is telling us that there was that we are just mere shadows of what has preceded us on the planet. And you can break it all out into, there's a lot of threads that can be followed to weave this tapestry.
In terms of if Atlantis was a physical place, where is the smart money on where it was located? I know there are different theories. What appeals to you? Which ones interest you the most?
Well, I tell you, I'm interested in all of them because the thing that the concept that gets that excites me is the idea of pre-diluvian civilization. And I'm talking about a civilization that existed before the end of the last ice age, and which is basically the cutoff point for Orthodox science. They basically want to tell us that we were, before that, we were at best hunter-gatherers, and we didn't. And so I think that since, you know, 12,000 years ago, the time referenced by Plato, we're talking about a time when ocean levels were hundreds of meters below where they are now. You have to realize that there were vast areas all over the world which were above water that are now below water, and that they were, they did have, there was a collective tapestry or fabric that tied them together. Charles Hapgood says there was a worldwide seafaring civilization that had knowledge of the of geography worldwide, and we know, for example, they knew about the coast of Antarctica beneath the ice, and we didn't rediscover that until the 19th century. And the point is that I don't think you're going to. I think it's a red herring to get into the idea that there was a particular place, even though there's quite a story that Plato told. But I really suspect that the important thing is there that that Atlantis described by Plato was one of a much bigger picture. John Michel used to talk about that we live in the ruins of a civilization so vast that we're only now beginning to get enough altitude in our climb back up the hill that we can kind of start to see the big picture. And that's really the essence of what we're trying to get across in the book, is that you need to look at things, you need to see the bigger picture to understand the point. And if you're constantly dwelling on some minor detail, then you're going to, and I think the opposition to this idea likes to play the game of trying to divert our attention to some particular aspect that can be debunked or disproved or challenged in some way, and get people to take their eye off the ball, to get away from the big story, which is that we did climb to great heights at some time in the distant past, and we lost it all. And now we're trying to regain some understanding of who it was we were before we went through whatever we went through. And re-summarizing my theory, this is what we get.
Interesting, interesting. Now, in terms of ancient sites, and you kind of talked a little bit about hieroglyphics and those kind of things and tied to the Sphinx. Can you talk a little bit more about some of the clues in ancient sites? I'm thinking about maybe places like Göbekli Tepe, places like that, where you find stone cutting capability that would seem to be impossible for the ancients, but they have these incredible tolerances and those kind of things. Atlantis, as it relates to ancient sites we see today.
Well, I tell you, if you start looking at Egypt, of course, you run into all kinds of anomalies that are barely touched on by the mainstream. I mean, generally speaking, and you mentioned tolerances. Chris Dunn, who we talk about in the story, who is a tool engineer, basically has done a tremendous amount of work on this subject, demonstrating that there is no way to understand some of the artifacts that we find from Egypt and many other places, like in South America, except to realize there had to be some kind of technology that, frankly, we can't find. We can't find how they did it. But I mean, look at the stone jars, for example. And there's many of them in the Cairo Museum. That are created out of diorite and stones that are the hardest stones that we know, and and if they were turned on some kind of a lathe, how do you create a lathe that can cut into diorite? And I mean, we don't have anything like that now. And Egyptologist William Flinders Petrie wrote on a lot of this, and he analyzed exactly what kind of tool it would have required to create some of the artifacts that we find. And we don't find the tools, but we do find the artifacts, and there are many of them, and they're all over the place. And some people use the term loosely, upart or OOP. Meaning out of place artifacts, things that just exist, and we don't really have a theoretical ability to explain them. There's quite an array of evidence there when you start to look at it.
One thing I thought was really interesting was this section you have on other worlds. How would possible civilizations from space tie into Atlantis?
Well, I'm not really talking about aliens, even though I'm not ruling out aliens. I know a lot of people are very fond of that idea, and I'm not. I think that, frankly, I think in my view, it's all, in all likelihood, the history of Earth is a story of a crossroads where all kinds of forces converged. But I think that people underestimate the heights to which civilization on this planet actually rose. And some people, they say, well, where did that come from? And they say they want to point to some of the world. And I say, well, you know, that could have, where did that come from? And so forth and so on. And so that doesn't answer the question. And the real question is, how high did we rise, and how wide was the realm in which we were involved? And I think there's certainly a good chance that it did include maybe Mars or other places. I mean, in esoteric tradition, the story is that the asteroid belt is the aftermath of a destroyed planet. John Brandenburg, who is a nuclear physicist, says there's lots of evidence that there were nukes on Mars. That there was, and when we finally get there, if Elon Musk has his way, we will be able to perhaps take a close look at some of these at some of the clues that we haven't been able to really study properly at a distance. Brandenburg is a nuclear physicist, and he's a serious guy, and he really believes that the ancient story of Mars does include nuclear holocaust.
Yeah, and that's a chilling thought, because just if you believe that Atlantis met its end through some kind of catastrophe, we could do just the same in a matter of I don't know, half hour, 45 minutes. Very, very frightening.
My point exactly.
on that topic, there was a great flood that wiped Atlantis off the face of the earth. But what do we think caused it?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of different schools of thought. And if you're looking at basically, most of these ideas are lumped broadly under the heading of catastrophism. And that's the idea that there was a catastrophic event in the past. And there are many who think that we were hit by some kind of an object from space, some kind of maybe a meteor or a comet. In fact, that's what Velikovsky believed. And there are others. The German scientist who wrote, the name escapes me at the moment. When you get to be my age, you'll understand about that kind of thing. But, but at any rate, there are many different ways of considering it. I think there's a lot of new evidence regarding the possibility of a hit from a bolide in space. The most interesting thing, in my point of view, is the crater they found in Greenland under the ice there, not just a few years ago. We're talking about something about 35 miles across the crater. And we're talking about something that occurred right about the time of the end of the Younger Dryas, which was the ice age, the last ice age episode that we had. And it also corresponds to the date that Plato used, or that the Plato story dates from, about 9500 BC. And of course, how did Plato, so far as we know, was not conversant in modern ice age theory. So why did he peg that date or that time? But anyway, I'm digressing a bit. I'm talking about the possibility of bolides. But then Dr. Robert Schock, he thinks that what has happened has been solar outbursts, where there have been tremendous releases of solar energy that has basically precipitated catastrophic events on Earth, and that basically led to all kinds of constructions and so forth that were basically to memorialize what people experienced when they went through these things. You're probably familiar with some of the script from Easter Island that people refer. And there's Schock quotes the researcher on that area, Anthony Perrott, I believe is his name, who is basically thinks these are these were descriptions of plasma events, plasma that resulted from this kind of solar episode that that he thinks happened. And there are other ways of looking at it too. And but whatever, however you come at it, there is strong evidence that something happened that was on a scale of destructive event happened on a scale which we find difficult to comprehend today. And that difficulty of comprehension is what leads to the amnesia. And it's really, if you look at it closely, you know, it has many, many ramifications.
Now it's,
people don't like to do it though, because it hurts.
We're in a place with the UFO question where things, we've had this paradigm shift and all of a sudden people are looking at it more seriously. Do you think something like that could happen in terms of the mainstream? Do you think something like that could happen with Atlantis? Because in your book, I think you intimate that, you know, the mainstream archaeological world in many cases has not been friendly. In fact, there is the word in there, cover up. Can you talk to us, first of all, about why you think there may have been a cover up of some important information? And then as a follow on, do you think there might be a paradigm shift where people start to elevate this and we start to stop chuckling at it and start looking at it seriously?
Well, I think that's going on. And this goes to the idea that we're trying to get. If you look at the, say the idea of a universal unconscious, a well of shared experience that all human beings have in common. And that there is basically, even though to our outer Western minds, the idea that there could be some kind of communication or some kind of mutual connection between all of these things is, you know, is kind of sneered at. But in fact, that's what we're looking at. We're looking at something that we all kind of participate in. And we have a sense that we have this shared history. And it's not necessarily spoken, but in that, and there are all kinds of we've created this kind of narrow window of possibilities that is, this is our waking awareness in the West. And you can go up to a certain point, and if you go beyond that, suddenly you're in terra incognita. You know, you're in a realm where everybody says, oh, that's weird. You know, I don't, they don't really want to think about it, but because it's frightening. And I think that the possibilities, what people are looking for, and I think this is part of the amnesia phenomenon. It's also part of the resistance to looking at ideas like, UFOs is that, we're living in a, you know, we're trying to keep ourselves in a kind of safe space where we know what to, where we can predict and what we can't. And if you suddenly introduce into that the larger possibilities, possibilities of a bolide from space, or the possibility of a culture, of an evolved culture in another world, perhaps another dimension that is entering in and that is making itself, making its presence felt in our outer conscious awareness, you know, you're suddenly looking at drama. You know, all change occurs through dramatic episode. And that is the basic structure of that we base theater on. And it is something that, and the way this unfolds is nothing new. This has been around for It's as old at least as civilization. It's certainly as old as the Greeks, and it's certainly as old as many other, you know, indigenous cultures who, you know, who tell a story of, you know, of what we were exposed to and how we change it, how it, you know, and then characters, Joseph Campbell was talked about this as, you know, the hero's journey that we all travel as we learn to digest or to take on the larger world that we don't know in the beginning. When we start out, it's all unknown to us. But then as we travel along the pathway we're slowly introduced to the elements that exist out there that we were not aware of. And it slowly, it opens up in us an understanding of the larger process. And this, of course, is the objective. I think that what we see in, you mentioned the UFO thing, but I think that here you have an example of where a certain piece of knowledge or understanding is inconvenient to, say, the military, mm-hmm. because it represents a threat that they don't know how to deal with. But rather than trying to you know, sit down and put on their thinking caps and actually tackle it in a straightforward way, they're obviously, the threat causes them to basically simply block it. You block it from your outer awareness. You deny its existence, and you basically and you play that game. But that doesn't work forever. I mean, we can see that going on all the time. I mean, I can see how it seems that things seem obvious that people simply won't talk about them, won't think about them, refuse to deal with them at all, and just basically sweep them under the rug or leave them aside. But you know that will break down eventually. The question is, will it be how disturbing will the ultimate awakening be? Will it be something that involves the destruction of our civilization, which I think it has been on various occasions, or will it? Or will we be able to surmount it and learn from it and maybe grow to another level?
Interesting indeed, as is the book Ghosts of Atlantis, How the Echoes of Lost Civilizations Influence Our Modern World. Doug, where can people find this book and more information about everything you do?
Well, they should go to our website for sure, AtlantisRising.com. And the book is available wherever books are sold, published by Inner Traditions. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all of the usual book dealers on the web. And they should buy the book for sure. And there's a lot about most of the contents of Atlantis Rising magazine, of which this is the outgrowth, are available in PDF form, and we hope very soon audiobooks and a lot of this on our website. So that's where I would direct them.
Fascinating stuff. Our guest has been J. Douglas Kenyon. The book is Ghosts of Atlantis, How the Echoes of Lost Civilizations Influence Our Modern World. Thank you so much for joining us today on the program.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in to Ancient Mysteries on the Air. And all I'll say is keep exploring those mysteries. We'll talk to you next time. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.